Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Let go, let go. Bum, bum, bum. Bum, bum, bum. Thank the Lord. Hey, 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 hey. What's up, you damn jarheads? Episode 35, In the Jar, here with your boy, Dupe, your favorite dumbass, the wealth tactician, whatever you want to call it. And we got a week one recap coming to you live here from the NFL. A little bit of week two college football, and it was a hell of a week. We got some mind-blowing upsets, particularly one I'm pretty upset about, and that's my Cincinnati Bengals dropping the first game at home to supposedly one of the worst teams in the league, the New England Patriots. Now, I think there are some talking points from that game that will still provide the city of Cincinnati some hope. I think we had some bad tackling. I think Joe Burrow's wrist might still be a problem. Other than that, I mean, we lost two fumbles in the game. That's equivalent to the amount of fumbles that we lost all season. One of them was a crushing, both of them are crushing turnovers. One of them, punt return, that we got to take care of the ball. I know we got them damn kicking footballs that these returners have got to make sure they hold on to. And the thing about kicking footballs is that they're much different than a football. This is not a good example. Kicking footballs are different in texture from game footballs. Game footballs, next time you tune in the NFL, take a look at what I'm talking about. On a kickoff, on a punt, the hue of the ball is much brighter than the hue of a brown game ball. The kicking balls are they look smoother. Maybe smooth is not the right word. They look glossier. And they also look, they got a more reddish hue to them. The game balls are brown. So my point being is that the kicking balls are kicking balls for a reason. It's harder for a ball carrier to grip a kicking ball the way they can grip a game ball. And that's no excuse, right? These guys get a lot of practice reps with the kicking footballs for obvious reasons, but the Bengals punt return, it's a white guy. His name's Charlie Jones. He played at Purdue, and handful of questionable decisions outside of the fumble. Obviously, he didn't just like muff the fumble. He caught it, brought it out, and one of the coverage guys for New England just made a really great play poking it out. They get the ball in plus territory, put more points on the board, and then you think about, I think the tight end's name was Hudson for Cincinnati. 87, I think is his number. He's damn getting ready to score. And it's just, I'm sure he's a young guy. I hadn't heard much about him before the game. And, you know, two backbreak, the turnovers were what were really backbreaking. You set aside the tackling, you know, the Bengals defense had a really hard time tackling Ramondre Stevenson. And I don't think that's a season-long concern. I think that's a week one issue. These guys haven't tackled live since January. I don't care how you cut it. It's the NFL. These guys are big. These guys are fast. If you go, you can't go live other than in the game because guys will be liable to get hurt. They already get hurt in practice without even going live. And I think that's a thing with the Bengals and really a lot of other teams in football that maybe struggle with tackling. The Bengals were the biggest issue there for tackling, in my opinion, week one. That's going to be something that gets resolved. That's going to be something that gets fixed. The thing I'm most concerned about for the Bengals is Joe Burrow's wrist. And I hate to be the guy to say it, but the way he looked in the pocket at times was very concerning. You could tell Joe Burrow was worried to get hit. You could tell that he was maybe not making some throws that he would otherwise make. And one play that comes to mind particularly for me was the third down when the Bengals were backed up, the game's on the line. Joe's got two guys on either side, on the outside. You got Chase, then you got Iasovas, two good receivers. You got one high safety, and both guys running out and up. Bang, bang. Game's on the line. We're down one possession. We got a chance to still win, even though we're backed up and it's third down. One high safety. You got arguably the best receiver in the league, one of the best receivers in the league running one of those out and up routes. And we take a shitty check down to Zach Moss, I believe, or I think it was Zach Moss, because Joe started panicking in the pocket before pressure was even there. You watch the clip. I didn't upload the, you watch the tape. I didn't upload the clip for the show, but literally you got a shot. Got to take the shot with the game on the line. And the reason he didn't take the shot was because he was worried about pressure that wasn't there. What does that tell me about Joe Burrow? It tells me that he still might not be at 100%. And that really worries me. That really worries me. I hope I'm wrong. I pray to God I'm wrong. We got Kansas City coming up this week. T. Higgins is probably not going to play in that game either. And so I know it's the Chiefs, one of the best teams in football. And trash talk aside on Twitter and all that, I'm sure if we lose that, it'll drive me nuts hearing all those Swifty Chief fans. But it's concerning. I think Joe Burrow's health, I mean, you can visibly see, we're in the jar. We're in the jar about it. I want to see Joe healthy. I want to see him thriving. I want to see him standing confidently in the pocket. And I fear that he can't do that because he's worried he's going to get hurt again because he's still feeling that wrist. We just took dinks and dunks the whole game. Joe said after the game, you know, I took what they gave me. It's like, no shit. I love you, Joe, but no shit. Of course they're not going to give you the deep ball. It's week one. Week one is one of the times where if you're a better, if you're a sports better, if you know your stuff, you can get some really good deals. But even then, you're going to see coverages that you hadn't seen before. You're going to see blitzes you haven't seen before. You're going to see fronts you haven't seen before. You're going to see offensive play schemes in the air that you haven't seen before, different route concepts that you haven't seen before. You're going to see different run concepts that you haven't seen before. Not to mention that every year there's new coaches, there's new defensive coordinators, there's new offensive coordinators, rosters continually turning over with new draft picks, guys that get cut, guys that get picked up in free agency. And so week one of the NFL is always going to be the most unpredictable week of the season. You can cut that either way when you're betting on these things. Because if you know your stuff and you can kind of see what teams are a bit overhyped, what teams maybe have not enough hype, you can find some good deals. But if you buy into the hype, if you eat the cheese, so to say, if you take the rat poison, we used to have that saying in college, man. It said, don't take the cheese, meaning don't be a rat going and trying to take the cheese out of the rat trap. You know what I'm saying? Don't listen to the media noise, the legacy fake news media. You know what I mean? Don't buy into the noise. Don't take the cheese. And as a better week one, I tried not to take the cheese. We did all right. And I don't condone sports gambling for anybody else. I just I like to wax lyrical on it. You know what I'm saying? And based on regulatory deals as a financial advisor, I shouldn't be. I have to say that, right? I have to say that I don't condone it for everybody. I don't suggest it for everybody. But if you do choose to do it and you know what you're doing, normally in NFL week one, you can find some good deals. And for that very reason, I stayed off of the Bengals spread, which I think a lot of the money was on week one. I know some folks that took it. And with a spread that big, man, it's hard. It doesn't matter if it's the 0-16 Lions versus the 0-7 New England Patriots. If you got a big, I mean, well, maybe that wouldn't be applicable. But for real, like anything more than a 6 or 7 point spread in the NFL, like if you're taking the favorite, it's dicey. Earlier in the week, I think the Bengals spread before the news about T. Higgins came out, they wasn't going to play. I think the Bengals spread was like 9.5 points. Just had a little spilly spill. Even right before game time, it was 6.5 points. And that ended up being a bad deal. It ended up being a bad deal. Now, are we underestimating this Patriots team? We could be. We could be. And there's a lot of overreactions about this week one game with the Bengals and the Patriots going around. I saw one clip from a podcast, and they label themselves like the football nerds or something, dude. It's interesting name. And I'm biased because I didn't like what they said. But what they said was that Joe Burrow is, and don't take me out of context here because I'm not the one saying this, but this nerds podcast, they said that Joe Burrow's more on tier with Dak Prescott than Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes. And I thought, well, that's weird because in 2021, we had the worst offensive line in the league, and our defense was decent in 2021. Cincinnati Bengals defense was decent in 2021, but they weren't top tier, I'd argue. We had one of the worst offensive lines, and Joe leads us to the Super Bowl. Where's that in all of this? He's not a game changer like Lamar or Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen. Have Lamar or Josh Allen taken their team to a Super Bowl yet? I could rant about this all day, but basically they were saying that Joe Burrow is not a guy that is good enough to, or maybe not good enough, but not enough of a game changer to cover up the blemishes around him, and that Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen are. Patrick Mahomes, he's in a league of his own. You know, he's not even worth mentioning there because everybody knows that. But I was kind of thinking, like, what about 2021? What about 2021? Yeah, Joe Burrow's had issues with his health. I think he's continuing to have issues with his health. And that really concerns me. I hope I'm wrong. I pray to God I'm wrong, brother. That it was just a week one fluky game, and Joe hasn't really been in the mix for some time as a starter since being hurt. I hope to God that that lack of pocket presence for him on that third down play late in the game, the Bengals' last offensive snap, was just him trying to come back to that state of standing in the pocket confidently. But something tells me Joe Burrow might still be hurt, and I hate to be the guy that says that. Something tells me the season will reveal what the truth is. That's why we play the games. But I think we're underestimating this New England team. Obviously, this is coming from a biased perspective as a Bengals fan. So if you don't want to hear these takes, fast forward.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
To another game recap here on this episode. But Jacoby Brissett mentioned after the game that he cried three different times leading up to the game. Once driving to the game, once before the game, and then again at some point he cried. And they were tears of joy. I would imagine gratitude that he's Jacoby Brissett is this deep into his career, and he's still getting the chance to lead a football team. He's still getting the chance to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. He's a hell of a guy. Jacoby Brissett would always come. So when I was with the Colts, Jacoby was our quarterback. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. When I was with the Colts, Jacoby was our quarterback because Andrew Luck very abruptly retired. And so we were left scrambling as an organization because nobody planned for Andrew Luck to retire. And Jacoby Brissett stepped in. We went 7-9 that year, but we had a huge Sunday night win against the Chiefs. We showed flashes. We had one of the best offensive lines in the league, the Indianapolis Colts did in 2019. And we had our own little room that the entry-level salespeople, the sales team that I was a part of, we had our own little room. And Jacoby would make a point, as the starting quarterback of the Colts, to go hang out with us, some entry-level sales kids right out of college, and ask us how we were doing, ask us how we were selling, ask us what people were doing on the phone, what we're saying on the phone. And so Jacoby Brissett is a hell of a leader, is my point here. He's a leader. He didn't have to come in and hang out with us. He had bigger fish to fry. And what that story about him breaking down into tears multiple times throughout the course of game day tells me is that he's a grateful guy. And it's hard to go against a guy that's got gratitude on his side. it's hard to go against a team that everyone, well, I shouldn't say that. It's hard to estimate the power of a team like that that's being slept on. I've said some things about Jerod Mayo in the past, but when you look at the facts, Jerod Mayo is a guy that was a part of a lot of winning football teams. He was a New England Patriot. And we've seen in the last couple of years, player coaches, particularly coaches that played for the team they're now coaching, have a ton of success. DeMeco Ryans with the Houston Texans, Dan Campbell with the Detroit Lions. There might be one that I'm leaving out. Oh, well, Antonio Pierce was a player coach, but I don't think he played for the Raiders. But Dan Campbell, DeMeco Ryans, two embodiments of player coaches that have had success with their former organization. Who's to say Jerod Mayo doesn't make some noise? And that might be my week one overreaction. I mentioned that Nerds podcast kind of overreacting to Joe Burrow's performance. That was their week one reaction. My week one reaction as a overreaction as a Bengals fan is to say that the New England Patriots might not be as bad as you think they are. I hope that doesn't end up on Freezing Cold Takes one day. But so here we go. This is how the Bengals have done in weeks 1-2 under Joe Burrow's tenure. 1-8. 1 win, 8 losses. 13 touchdowns, 11 turnovers, 79.6 passer rating. Pretty abysmal. Pretty abysmal. So I don't know if it's the way they're approaching camp. I don't know if Zach Taylor's got a problem getting these guys in playing shape early in camp leading up to the early season. I don't know. But there's got to be some type of residual factor that plays into this. It could be mental. We've had high expectations. The Bengals have had high expectations for the past 2 or 3 years, ever since the Super Bowl run to open the season. It could be high expectations. And I really hope it's not that. I'd rather it be that we're not conditioning these guys in camp the right way and that they just come out a little sloggy. You know what I'm saying? If it's a mental issue with pressure, that's a bigger problem. That's a bigger problem. And I don't think that's a problem with Burrow. I don't. He's kind of, Joe Burrow's become the face of mental fortitude, stoicism, confidence in quarterbacks in the NFL, I would say. I would argue. Again, my opinion's very biased, growing up 90 miles south of Cincinnati. So I don't think that it's a mental ineptitude on the Bengals' part to not be able to live up to expectations early in the season. At least that's my hope. My hypothesis is that there's something in the way Zach Taylor's running this program, this team, that maybe the guys just aren't physically ready when they're coming out of camp, and it takes a couple weeks for them to get into playing shape and playing live games and playing fast, physical in weeks 1 and 2. But nonetheless, weeks 1 and 2, the Bengals are 1-8. Under Joe Burrow. Not what you want. And I'm delusionally optimistic that we had some turnovers that really crushed us and that they won't happen again. We had missed tackles that guys just might not remember what it feels like to go live and hit and wrap up and go to the ground. That's my optimistic opinion about the Bengals. I think we're going to be okay. I believe we're going to be okay. But if Joe's actually still hurt, we might not be okay. We'll see. On to the next. Titans played the Bears in Chicago, and it was a weird game. It was a weird one. Titans go up 17-0. Bears don't score a single touchdown. And the Bears end up pulling it out. This one guy tweeted, the Titans not covering 4.5 after leading 17-0 and not allowing an offensive touchdown to a Bears team that finished with under 150 total yards needs to be studied in a lab. The Bears made a blocked punt that they brought back for a touchdown. There's a bad pick six by Will Levis that you can see here on the screen. Went down to his knees. He was rolling left, and he was under pressure, and he was just trying to be a hero and flip it out with his left hand, and it was just a brutal pick six, among other things. There's a funny little game recap clip that might be next, might be the one after this, that that kind of sums up this game. I had the Titans money line. I thought that it was a really good deal. And when the Titans were up 17-0, I was sitting there thinking, we cracked the week one code, baby. You know what I'm saying? And then stuff happens. Let's see what we got. Here's the blocked punt.
Stonehouse with pressure. A block. It's scooped up by the Bears. Back the other way. Jonathan Owens. Touchdown, Chicago.
And that's just the kind of stuff that will happen in week one. Even on punt return, the Bears probably had a look that they didn't show all of preseason. And Matt Eberflus before the game was probably like, you know what? We're going to try this 8-man up punt block look and see if we can get one. And sure enough, I'm sure in the Bears special teams meetings this week that they are really fired up. I remember special teams meetings whenever a play like that would be made. It'd go on it's something in football, in a football organization, when you make a play like that, let's say you're in a special teams meeting and you're the Bears and you're watching that blocked punt against the Titans, that's something you call teach tape. Let's run it back. I want to see the front. Oh.
Stonehouse with pressure.
Well, I can't see the front because the play already happened.
Up by the Bears. Back the other way. Jonathan Owens.
That's on your boy.
Chicago.
Cutting clips. I wanted to see the front. But anyways, special teams meetings are always joyous when you get some points on special teams. Because, and people underestimate the importance of special teams. It's much different in the NFL now that the kickoff's different. But people underestimate the importance of special teams. Being able to flip the field is something that's not always reflected on the scoreboard directly, but it's always reflected on the scoreboard indirectly. And so in this case, this is a severe case because the Bears got points on special teams. It doesn't happen very often at all. But that happened with the Bengals. I wholeheartedly believe, offensive performance aside with the Bengals, I'm fixated on this game, as you could tell. The Patriots were just able to flip the field, whether it was with turnovers or special teams. I mean, the Bengals punt returner, Charlie Jones, fumble aside, had two returns that I saw that he fielded that were the 15-yard line or deeper. I'm being very, very generous with that. It might have been the 10-yard line that he fielded that he could have just let the ball roll out of the back of the end zone, in my opinion, backspin aside. Could have been backspin on the ball. I don't know. Man, as a punt returner, I don't know. I've never returned punts. The idea of it always scared me. You know, you see this damn ball going 3 million light years in the sky, and I gotta not only get under it and locate it like a damn center fielder, but then I got to worry about guy while I'm worried about the ball in the air and making sure, you know, I can't, well, more like a punt. Bang. Yeah, spiral. Bang. I'm not doing it right. I'm scared to hit the mic. Then you got to worry about these boys that are probably right here rumbling in and popping you. And that's a thing. Punt returning is a thing that you got to get hundreds of hundreds and thousands of reps to be comfortable back there. Because if you don't have those reps with the jugs machine or whatever, normally it's the jugs machine that these guys get the most reps, you know, catching, fielding punts. But if you don't have those reps, you got to have some damn mental fortitude, because you're worried about two things. Number one, I got to take care of the ball. Number two, I don't want my clock to get cleaned. And sometimes when your clock gets cleaned, it's a double whammy and you lose the ball. So back to the Titans and Bears. Returning wasn't even a factor here because it got freaking blocked. And I think the reason it got blocked is because the Bears showed a front that the Titans hadn't seen on any preseason film. And that's the thing about week one. That's the unpredictable thing about week one. You probably see one or two of those every week one of the season. It's not a factual statement. That's just an estimate of mine. But yeah, that there's, I had a, my head coach at Samford used to always say, you never know what play is the turning point in the game until after the game. And after the game, if you're watching film, you know exactly what play turned the tide in hindsight. And for the Titans and Bears, that punt block return for a touchdown was that play. Here's a recap of the game. I love this.
I've only got one dart.
Throw it.
Looking downfield.
And I miss.
Williams under pressure.
Oh, great heavens.
What? Oh, shit.
That's quite big.
Coming right to Tennessee.
Oh, God, please, no.
Pressure coming. Levis
throws
in. What a catch!
No!
Williams slings in, looking for more.
I'm a bird.
Oh, look, he's flying.
Oh, my gosh.
He lost the ball, and then it's recovered by Chicago.
What is happening?
We're fucking.
What did he say?
Oldhouse with pressure, a block.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Bears off, kid.
On third down and six. Here they come.
Oh, no.
Gordon's coming.
Oh, my gosh.
Look at this little floppy piece of shit.
Levis off the back foot. Floats it up.
I'm going to come.
Oh, no.
Jalen Johnson seals the deal.
Look at us. Look at us. Huh? Who would have thought?
Not me.
Let's go!
I'm glad I didn't watch that damn game, because like I said, I had Titans money line and I was going back and forth. I was so fixated on the damn Bengals game, screaming at television. One of our dogs doesn't like it when I yell, and she was on the couch just like looking at me like, are we going to be okay? And it was like, no, we're not. We suck. But, you know, like I said, I think everyone's overreacting with the Bengals. And again, I'm very fixated on this game. I'm still fixated on it because it hurt so badly. But long story short, I was so fixated on the Bengals game, I didn't watch this damn Titans-Bears game as much, you know, at least during the slot. And I would have been banging my head against the wall knowing I had the damn money line and the Titans blow a 17-point lead. You know, we'll see. We'll see about the Titans. I thought that they have I think they have some promising talent. It's just whether or not they'll be able to gain the mental fortitude to respond to adversity. Brian Callahan, former Bengals offensive coordinator, it's his first season as a head coach. His dad, Bill Callahan, was a hell of an offensive line coach. So Some coordinators are great football minds, and I'm not saying this about Brian Callahan, that he's not the charismatic team leader type. It's 1 week of football. But I am saying that sometimes coordinators are better suited as coordinators. I'm not saying that about Brian Callahan. But I don't know. We'll see about the Titans. What else do we got? I'm making sure everything's in order here. Okay. Colts lost 29-27, I believe, to the Houston Texans. Division game to open the year. Not many division games across the week one slate. But Colts were at home. And the Texans just played the way they were supposed to play. This is another game that I didn't see a ton of. It's even when you're watching Red Zone with the different slots during the NFL Sunday, it's really hard to get a good picture of what's really happening in a game other than just the damn highlights. You really got to get into the film. And one play that will go on Teach Tape for the Colts offense. I don't even know if you could put this on Teach Tape. It was just a hell of an athletic play by Anthony Richardson. We got multiple angles here because it was arguably the best, one of the best throws of the week. Trevor Lawrence had himself a hell of a throw to that rookie out of LSU in the back corner, back left corner of the end zone. But Anthony Richardson made arguably the best throw of the week here. Here it is.
I've only got one dart.
Throw it.
Looking downfield.
And I miss.
Insane.
Williams under pressure.
Oh, great heavens.
What?
Oh, shit.
Insane.
What the fuck y'all got? Damn.
Bayless Jones. Oh,
Colts, I mean, look, man. Former employer. I always want to see Indy do well. Colts might have something if they can string that together. And, I mean, the Texans are a great team, and you only lose by 2 points. It seemed like the Texans controlled the majority of the game. Joe Mixon had himself a day. I think he had about 150-plus yards rushing against Indy. So you got a special player, Mixon. I wish every day that Cincinnati found a way to keep him because I think – the run game is going to be a glaring hole. Ironically, the only touchdown the Bengals scored on Sunday was on the ground. But here's another angle of Richardson's throw that kind of highlights the way he slipped, the how bad this play could have gone, and how good it ended up being. Here it is.
Just watch his right
bad.
Foot. It just slides right there.
Recovered.
And then essentially hip square to the line of scrimmage. He launches this ball, Jason.
I mean, that's just an athletic play. And the Bengals were trying to chirp Anthony Richardson when they were having joint practices with the Colts, saying he didn't know who he was throwing to. He wouldn't throw it. He was running around. It's like, dude, this guy, Anthony Richardson, this guy's a damn athlete. This guy's a special athlete. And there were headlines coming out leading up to the game that Anthony Richardson had only started 17 games since high school. They're saying they drafted this guy blindly. And I understand why they did it. I'm biased because the Colts, again, are a former employer. But I understand why Chris Ballard went and got him high in the draft out of the University of Florida. This kid is 6'5", 230, 240. He's got the body of a tight end. He's got the arm of damn Thanos, dude. And you see how he was able to make plays, make a play. I haven't watched much film yet. And so I didn't get the gist of the Colts game. But it seemed like with Mixon on the ground, the Texans were able to just control that ball game. And that's the way it is when you're able to get consistent 4 to 6 to 10 yard runs on the ground. You're going to control the game, and as long as your defense comes through, more often than not, you're going to win. Steelers played the Falcons. Your boy had the Steelers money line, so that felt good to get a dub. Cordarrelle Patterson had rest in peace, Rich Homie Quan on his cleats. Respect to that. Rest in peace to someone who made the soundtrack for a lot of my high school years. A couple of the years where I was really starting to find my groove playing football as a young man, junior and senior in high school. Rich Homie Quan was on the speakers leading up to a lot of our games in high school. That car drop and make you feel some type of way. I know, but I don't know the words, man. My Ben Hutt trying to make him some. Ain't no telling he'll do for the pay. Ain't no telling. Souffle, I'm straight. I say my play. Saudi play. I'm a smooth operator. I drop top of my whip, partner. That car drop and make you feel some type of way. I know he do. I got spit on my chin. Damn, I don't think I did. I was just paranoid about it. Them jaw dropping make you feel some type of way. They still don't know exactly what happened with Rich Homie Quan. They said his boy saw him on the floor at 3 a.m. with food in his mouth. So who knows if he choked or if he OD'd, but his girl and his buddy just kind of thought he was sleeping on the floor, sleeping on the couch. It's really tragic, man. He died at 33 in Atlanta. And Cordarrelle Patterson, I like to call him Cordarrelle Peterson, one of the great jackknives in the NFL, had rest in peace Rich Homie Quan on his cleats. And you used to not be able to do this, to my knowledge. You used to not be able to wear custom cleats in the game. A lot of guys would wear them in the pregame warm-ups and then change the cleats going into the game. But I don't think you get fined anymore. And if you do, these guys just eat it. You know, it's clear that NFL players like to live their life and they have the means to eat some fines. You know what I'm saying? So I don't want to spread misinfo here. I'm pretty sure you can wear these in the game, custom cleats, without getting fined. But nonetheless, there's a picture of him running the ball. Pittsburgh wins 18-10. They're the second team in week one. The Bears did it and the Steelers did it. They win without getting in the end zone. Chris Boswell, the kicker for the Pittsburgh Steelers, nailed 6 field goals, putting my math skills to the test. 18 points, 6 field goals. I think he nailed one from 57. Nailed one from 55, nailed one from 51, 44, and then there's probably 2 more that I'm leaving out. But nonetheless, brother, the Steelers' defensive line, absolutely barbecued the Atlanta Falcons front five. I mean, every single rep, I watched this game closely, every single rep, Kirk Cousins was getting touched every single rep. It was like the Steelers' defensive line was playing against the Atlanta Falcons' offensive line on rookie mode in damn Madden. It was just insane. T.J. Watt recovers a fumble, I believe, to ice the game. He got back there, or maybe he got a sack, maybe he recovered a fumble. I can't remember in this very particular moment. But they were all making plays. They were all getting back there. They were all touching Kirk Cousins. And Kirk Cousins continues to live in the nightmare of being an NFL quarterback that is constantly getting hit. I can't imagine how Kirk Cousins' body has felt over the last 4 to 6 years, getting hit all the time, man, getting battered, getting bruised. And props to him because he continues to show up. He continues to produce and get the ball out. I don't know many other quarterbacks that would have that kind of mental fortitude to know that they are getting hit every time they drop back and still do something. But this Steelers defensive line is going to be a big problem, a big, big problem in the AFC North. They're first in the division right now because they're the only team that won this week. And I don't even need to really speak on the Browns and the Cowboys, man. That was a sloppy performance. Deshaun Watson didn't complete a single ball that was longer than 15 yards in that game. I think he completed 24 and didn't have – I don't think he had – I don't remember a stat line. It was anywhere from 150 to 200 that he had, which for 24 completions isn't ideal. Deshaun Watson might be different. I don't know if it's the expectations from the historic contract. I mean, we used to have guys, I remember in college, if a scholarship guy wasn't performing up to par in practice, let's say a scholarship guy messed up in practice, I'd remember coaches bum rushing him and saying, "You're stealing money! You're stealing money!" And that's like, shit. That's like, let's say you go to an institution that's $35,000 for a year. That's $140,000 for 4 years, brother. Deshaun Watson ran off with the bag, dude. His agent's doing a hell of a job. And I think I'm starting to say that a lot when we talk about guys that are highly paid that aren't really producing. Dak Prescott got his deal right before the game on Sunday. And his stat line was, I don't want to say it wasn't similar to Deshaun Watson's, but in terms of the passing yards, it was pretty similar. But the way he just orchestrated the game, the way he was able to, make sound decisions, making like mid-level, short to mid-level throws that go for anywhere from 10 to 15 yards consistently, he was rolling out and just had a ton of time, ton of space. It was almost like breath of fresh air type of plays where, you know, you just roll out and it's like, oh man, all right, I got some time to set, bang, throw. And CD Lamb looked really sharp. I mean, there's a reason he's the highest paid guy in terms of receivers right now. Steelers win 18 to 12, I think, over the Falcons, 18 to 12. Or was it 18 to 10? I can't remember. You guys can go look up the score. But Steelers money line cashes. That was a good deal at plus 164. All right. What else do we got? We'll recap the Monday night game. San Francisco 49ers just beat the hell out of the Jets. 32 to 19. And Christian McCaffrey was ruled out the night leading up to the game. Monday night, and there was a bit of controversy because the backup running back that stepped in for McCaffrey, Jordan Mason, stepped in, had a hell of a game, 150 plus yards rushing. And, after the game, he had a post game interview where he said he knew Friday that he was going to be the starter. There's a lot of outrage on X about this, you know, the NFL, this is anti-fan. You guys need to release this. There's a lot of money around fantasy teams and sports betting. You know, you can't do this. And I don't know if all the Christian McCaffrey bets were restituted or not. If they weren't and you had the unders, that's the easiest money you damn made. I thought the under on the Lions-Rams Sunday night game was easy. Let me tell you,
when you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Sportsbooks were not restituting the Christian McCaffrey bets. I would have loved to have the under because I was definitely looking at it. Money talks. I didn't take it, so I'll leave it at that. But there's a bit of controversy. Here's Kyle Shanahan when he was asked whether they told Jordan Mason that he was going to be the starter on Friday night.
Jordan said after the game he was told on Friday night he was going to start. When did Christian start feeling awry?
I never told Jordan he was going to start. Told me he had to be ready a bunch, but I might have been Bobby or somebody trying to pump him up, but I knew he was going to have to play a lot. I told him that he was going to have to, wasn't going to be like usual. He was going to be a number two back that was splitting a lot of the time. But now he didn't know he for sure was doing that till today.
Christian have some sort of...
Dang. So, naturally, Jordan Mason was embarrassed about this. And maybe it was true, maybe it wasn't. Somebody, whether it was Jordan Mason in the post-game interview, maybe he was feeling a lot of buzz because he had just had a good game, said something. But I don't know why a guy would just say that and not be truthful about it. Maybe it was deeply implied that Jordan Mason was going to be the starter, and Shanahan, like he said, didn't explicitly tell him. It's not black and white. It sounds like it could be very gray, but nonetheless, it's very embarrassing. I'm sure he showed up to the building. We're shooting this on Tuesday. I'm sure he showed up to the building today and got some lip from some of the coaches. You can't be talking to the media about that. You're a backup. You can't be talking like that. You had a big game, but this is the NFL. What are you doing for me lately? And so they asked Jordan Mason about it, and here's the response from him. Clearly, he's very embarrassed about saying that.
When did you find out that you'd be in the starting lineup?
That question right there is why I'm at. That's why I don't like really talking to media, because you say one thing wrong, and then, you know, I don't know. Just skip that question.
Yeah. So there you go. A brief stat line there. I mean, dude, he was embarrassed. He was embarrassed. I think the buzz and the euphoria of having a game like that, he gets interviewed after the game. It was probably implied on Friday night that he was going to start the game. And he probably just had a moment where he slipped up. You heard him say, you say something, one thing wrong. He probably just slipped up and said something that wasn't, you know, wholly true. I'm sure it was implied. I don't think he was lying. I think he knew, but I don't think anyone explicitly told him that Jordan Mason was going to be starting on Sunday, on Friday night. I think it was deeply implied, and he just got swept away with the moment after a big game, getting interviewed on national television, and I think that's what that is. So Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers looked like he was playing pretty good football. The 49ers just really controlled the football again. When you have a guy that is running for 150 plus yards, you're going to be able to control the football. You're going to be able to keep the ball away from the other team. And I think that's exactly what happened. Aaron Rodgers, 13 for 21, 167, 1-1. And I think that one pick was a ball that just got batted up and ricocheted into the hands of a 49ers defensive guy. But Aaron Rodgers looks like he's back. He's playing good football. We're very pro Aaron Rodgers on this show for a lot of reasons. But Aaron Rodgers held his own, played decent. I think there's a lot of hope for the Jets. I think there's more hope for the Jets than based on the week one performance than there is for the Bengals, you know, because at least you know your quarterback is in the form that you know he can be in. So here's something else that happened. Tyreek Hill was detained brutally before the game on Sunday. Driving to the game, he was not a block from the stadium in his McLaren. He gets pulled over for speeding, and there's a lot of different ways you could spin this. It's hard. The media wants to politicize this as much as possible. And I think people are in their rights to say, dude, this was not handled the right way by the police. People were saying, whoa, but Tyreek Hill was going 100 plus miles an hour in a 40. I just saw the body cam footage pulling up to shoot this, and there's no way he was going more than 60, right? So that's out of the way. You guys can go and watch the body cam footage. I'm not going to show it on the show because, number one, you can find it easily. Number two, I don't think there's any place for that kind of energy on this show. But Tyreek Hill was, he's a bit lippy to start. And then he rolled up his window and, the cop gets pissed off. He's like, roll down your window, roll down your window. He's like, matter of fact, get out of the car. And that's when the cops started not handling it the right way. A job of an officer is to de-escalate a situation. And when you open up the butterfly dough of Tyreek Hill's McLaren and you start ripping him out of there and yanking him to the ground, and he's saying, I just got surgery on my knee, bro. I just got surgery. Please, like, take it easy. Just let me sit down. You know, the cops didn't handle it the right way. They were placed on, one of the cops, at least one of them, was placed on administrative leave as a result of this. Here's a quick clip of Hill's agent
Drew Rosenhaus talking about it. I'm not going to go through this whole clip.
What happened? It's a heartbreaking situation. Obviously, I love Tyreek. I hated to see him in the situation he was in with the police. He is going to play today. Number one, he's okay. Number two, he's going to play. Number three, apparently got a ticket for a moving violation entering the stadium. How things escalated into the situation that they were in handcuffs and being held on the ground with police is mind-boggling to me. I'm deeply concerned by that, very troubled. We will be looking into it. We will be investigating this. We will look out for Tyreek, but I'm not going to make any allegations at this time. The most important thing is Tyreek is okay. Physically, mentally, he was very distraught about what happened. Tyreek has told me over and over he's a big supporter of police. He was telling the police there, I want to be a police officer in the future, but this is crazy. I've never seen anything like this.
Drew, what did Tyreek Hill tell you happened?
Well, it was all happening in real time. He said he was driving into the stadium. The police stopped him, took him out of the car, basically, at that point, got rough with him. And from my estimation, it was completely unnecessary. And you'd mentioned the whole Scottie Scheffler thing.
I'm going to cut it off there. So Tyreek Hill scored the longest touchdown of his career against the Jaguars. The Dolphins were down a couple of possessions and find a way. Calais Campbell, one of the defensive linemen for the Dolphins, actually, and Jonnu Smith, the tight end, both were reprimanded, I think even temporarily taken into custody by the police because they saw the stuff going down with Tyreek Hill and stopped to help their teammate. What a beautiful example of what it means to be a teammate. Calais Campbell, Jonnu Smith, seeing Tyreek Hill in duress on account of the police and stopping and not just stopping and saying like, what's going on? All right, I'm going to go to the game. No, like the police had to deal with them too. It was really ridiculous. Mike McDaniel, the head coach of the Dolphins, commented on this and he said that he was very, what's the word? Mike McDaniel basically said the same thing I did, where it's like, we got a strong team. We got guys that are willing to fight for each other. And Tyreek said this, man, I don't know if he wasn't Tyreek Hill, that it wouldn't have gone worse. So he had a touchdown celebration after his 80-yard touchdown and put him in handcuffs, dude. That shit was hard, dude. That shit's really hard. You know, he's... a guy's ability to handle certain stress under high stakes, like an NFL football game, it's truly impressive. So maybe we'll see Tyreek eat even more now. You know what I mean? All right. What do we got next? Fashion clip of the week right here. Look at this. Commanders, Buccaneers after the game. Buccaneers get the win. This reporter for Fox, dude, she looks like a damn Colombian coke dealer, dude. Look at her hat. Look at her chains, dude. Look at the lettuce flowing out of the hat and the lightly hued sunglasses, dude. She looks like a damn Miami. I already used a coke dealer joke. She looks like a damn. I don't know, dude. But look, that fit is crazy. That fit is crazy. You know what I'm saying? I don't think I like it. I don't think I like it, but I respect the hustle. I respect the ambition behind trying to be a damn Fox sideline reporter being fitted up. You know what I'm saying? But that's Colombian coke dealer vibes right there, baby. Look like get an eight ball off of her after the game. Come out down near the tunnel at damn Raymond James Stadium, and she right there ready. She's like, "What you need? What you need?" Yeah, I'm going out on the town tonight. I'm going to the Green Lemon down on Dale Mabry Drive. You know what I'm saying? What you need? You need something? You need party favors? You need something? I'm probably running that joke into the ground. All right, next deal. Lions beat the Rams 26-20 in overtime in Detroit on Sunday night. Puka Nacua will be out for four weeks minimum. It was like something in his knee. I don't think it was either an MCL or a PCL. But you know, bro, it's football. And I think he had like two guys coming down on him. He fell on his knee hard one time, no contact. And then he got the ball again. Two guys coming down on him, one high, one low. Tough for the Rams, because it's going to be really interesting to see if you can get Cooper Kupp at full tilt like he was a couple years ago, and then hopefully have Puka Nacua going full tilt. You got a really formidable two-headed monster in the passing game for the Los Angeles Rams. But nonetheless, game goes to overtime. The over-under for that game was egregious. And I actually, on the show last week, made the over pick. That was wrong, but my money went to the under, which was ended up being 54.5. And even with an overtime game, total ends up being 47. It was the easiest win of the week for you boy. So Lions get it done in overtime. They just made some big plays. It was much more of a defensive game than I think anyone anticipated. And two teams that are definitely going to be in the mix down the stretch of the season. What else? We had some college football going on. The most interesting game in college football that I saw, other than Northern Illinois upsetting Notre Dame, that was huge. The most interesting game I saw last week in college football was Oklahoma State against Arkansas. Now, that game went into two overtimes, I believe. It was in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Arkansas, I think, is an underrated team based on their upside. They had a receiver, number two, that was making a lot of plays. They got that quarterback. His last name's Green. First name starts with a T. And the kid showed a lot of promise. He just made a lot of stupid plays, dropping snaps. Seemed like he was kind of out of it at times mentally. As a lot of these young kids playing in college football, you know, males don't mentally develop until age 25. So give him a little bit of grace. But my boy was dropping snaps, and then he turned around and make a huge play. Really frustrating game for Arkansas Razorbacks fans because they had so many opportunities to win it. Oklahoma State had a damn 40-yard field goal when the game was tied as the clock was expiring, and they miss it. They miss another field goal, I believe, in overtime. Arkansas had a ton of chances to win that game. Kentucky, my hometown Cats, got absolutely dominated by South Carolina. That freshman defensive end, Dylan Stewart, we talked about him on the show, wreaked absolute havoc. I think there was a play at one point where Kentucky was pinned back in their own end zone. South Carolina rushed three guys, and all three of them ended up getting back there. Brock Vandegrift ends up getting benched. What's the UK backup? Wimsatt is the UK backup quarterback. South Carolina goes into the game 9.5-point underdogs. And, they win the game. That game would be easy money. Okay, so now we recapped everything. We're going to get into some betting picks for week two of the NFL. I went before the Monday night game. I don't know what I did on the Monday night game. We're going to have to cross-reference that. But Monday night game aside, we went 6-9 on our picks. So this week, we'll hopefully get closer to 500 here, if not exceed 500. Let's see what we got. We got the Thursday night game with the Bills and the Dolphins coming up. Okay, I'm trying to see the lines on my damn computer. All right. So, this is not financial advice. Do your own research. I don't necessarily condone sports gambling for everybody. And these odds are also subject to change. They are via FanDuel Sportsbook at the time of this recording. So, let's get into it. Thursday night, Bills, Dolphins. I'm taking the Bills money line on that game. And again, we went Monday night game aside. My editor, Luke, he'll make a note on how we did on the Monday night game because I can't remember the pick. But Monday night game aside, we went 6-9. And Bills Dolphins, I got Bills money line. It's just good value based on how they played. So we'll take that to the bank, Bill. And I'm actually going to write these picks down as we go. Okay. Next deal we got. Is that a okay? Sunday early slate. We got the Saints at the Cowboys. 6.5 point spread. 45.5 point over under. That's just a huge spread. I really hate this. But we're going to take this is a hard one. Again, I haven't done any research on this slate of games yet. So we are making live picks, rapid fire. Let's see. Give me the over. Over 45.5. Over 45.5. Okay, next one. Buccaneers at Detroit Lions. I'll say this. The Saints played really well. It was a bad team in the Carolina Panthers. I can't believe the NFL is exposing Germany to such bad football. We got Giants and Panthers in Germany. We'll see if that's coming up this week as we go down the list. But the Saints, they didn't play bad. The Cowboys, they played great. That 6.5 point spread is just too big, and the Cowboys definitely could come out and eat. But the Saints also could defy the bookmakers' expectation of that. So we're going to stay off the spread, just stay off the money line. It's not good enough money line value for the Cowboys to take that. So we're going to go with the over. Life's too short to take the under unless the under is the right pick. All right, Bucks at Lions. Bucks come in as 7-point underdogs. Over-under is 50.5. I like the Buccaneers to cover that. I think they played too well against the Commanders to justify being such a big underdog. Obviously, the Lions did what they had to do against the Rams. But again, we mentioned it earlier, 7-point spread in the NFL is huge, and the quality of play is too even across the board most of the time to justify a spread that big. So let's go with Bucks plus 7. All right. Browns and Jaguars. Browns come in as 3.5 point underdogs. Over-under is 41.5. And it's hard to justify taking the Browns at any juncture right now with the way Deshaun Watson played. And obviously that's reflected in the spread. Jags played great, even though they ended up blowing it late. They did play good football. They should have won that game against Miami if they had kind of kept it going down the stretch. Let's go 41.5 over under. Let's go. Damn, this is a lot of these are stumpers, man. A lot of these are stumpers. Give me 3.5 3.5 at money line. You just can't justify a deal like that. Niners at Vikings, 5.5 point spread. Over under is 45.5. Let's see. I mean, the Vikings, they played the bona fide worst team in football in the New York Giants. Over-unders at 45.5. Give me the under. Give me the under. All right. Chargers at Panthers. Chargers come in as 6.5-point favorites. Over-under's 38.5. I'm going to take the over in this game. Over. I mean, that's 38.5 is just too low for an NFL game, in my opinion. All right. Raiders at Ravens. 9.5-point spread. This might be the biggest spread of the week. Over-under's at 41.5. The Ravens had a good showing against the Chiefs. They arguably were a toe away from sending that game against the Chiefs in overtime. And the Raiders, they didn't necessarily get dog walked by the Chargers. So let's go with Raiders to cover, because that spread is just too big. And maybe the bookmakers want us to do that. Seahawks, Patriots. Seattle comes in as a 3.5-point favorite. Over-under's 38.5. Again, I think I got to take the over on this one, because that's just too low. And should never say this. I think this is one of the biggest pitfalls in trying to find valuable investments to make. Not that I'm calling sports betting an investment. It can be. Is that they must know something I don't. 38.5 just sounds too low. So we're going to go with the over. Colts at Packers, Lambeau Field. Colts come in as 3.5-point favorites off the Jordan Love injury. We saw Jordan Love get hurt on the last play against the Eagles, and he's probably going to be out for a couple of weeks. So it's going to be Malik Willis at the helm, I would imagine, for the Green Bay Packers. Colts played good. We talked about that. Colts played good. I think that the Colts hit that 3.5. Matter of fact, let's play safe. Let's take Colts money line. Let's play Colts money line. I'm trying to buff the record up here. Jets and Titans in Nashville. 4.5-point underdogs, the Titans. Over-under's 41.5. Give me the Jets on the spread. 4.5. There you go. All right. We got Giants at Commanders. So that Germany game is not happening this week. 2.5-point spread. Give me the Commanders on the spread. That's a no-brainer. The Giants are the worst team in football. Okay. Rams at Cardinals. Cardinals come out as a 1.5-point favorite at home. Puka Nacua out. Give me the Rams to cover that. Cardinals showed good. Cardinals showed they had a good showing against the Bills. But I just think that spread's a little inflated. And obviously Vegas gives the home team 3 points. So really it should be the Rams that are the favorite on paper here. It's just the fact that they're on the road, and this atmosphere at State Farm Stadium is not anything that'll disrupt Matthew Stafford. I'll just say that. So we're going to take the Rams plus 1.5. Bengals, Chiefs. This is one I'm very excited for. Hopefully. Hopefully I don't come out crushed again. Bengals are 5.5-point underdogs. Over-under is 48.5. This is always hard for me. This is always hard for me, making picks with teams that I have a emotional investment in. But, man, I just, that's really hard to call. Oh, man. Give me the Bengals to cover. Give me the Bengals to cover. Even with T. Higgins probably being out, we're going to make a fan pick. Steelers at Broncos. Steelers come out as 3-point favorites. Over-under is 36.5. Give me the over on that. Steelers over 36.5. That might be the lowest over-under of the week. We keep saying that. Bears at Texans. Bears come out as 6.5-point favorite. Or Bears come out as 6.5-point dogs. Over-under is 46. Give me the under. 46.5. And week two is where a lot of people get hit hard. I hope our picks don't get hit hard here. This is just, we're going on the fly, under. And then the last game of the week, Monday night game, Falcons at Eagles. Falcons come in at 6.5-point dogs. Over-under is 48.5. Again, this is tough. This is tough to call, my friends. But I'm going to take the Falcons to cover. Atlanta Falcons plus 6.5. And those are our picks for the week. And that brings us to the end of this show. End of the NFL week one. The beginning of the NFL week two is upon us. College football week three. We hope you're liking the way we're doing these episodes. We're in season. So leave a comment, like, and most importantly, subscribe to the channel. Helps us out a lot. Helps us create the best possible shows we can create. And we'll see you next week on In the Jar. Appreciate y'all watching this long, and we'll see you.